House will come to order. Flag salute will be led by Representative Huffman.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Opening ceremony will be presented by Sarah Vaughn Trail, singing guest of Representative Gilman.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains' majesties, above the fruited plain. America, America, God shed his grace on thee, and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. Oh, beautiful for heroes proved in liberating strife, who more than self their country loves, and mercy more than life. America, America, may God thy gold refine, till all success be nobleness, and every gain divine.
Courtesies. Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sarah Vaughn, your opening today is, of course, my granddaughter and my legislative aide. She's from Trail, Oregon, and she graduated from Linfield with a music and psychology major. This is not her first visit to the House. In 1987, she crawled around that desk right over there that happens to be the desk for the representative from the Bedrock District. Sarah was less than 1 year old. Thank you, Sarah.
Further courtesies, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Amy, would you please stand? Colleagues, I'd like to introduce to you today an honorary page from Sublimity Middle School. Amy's 12 years old in the seventh grade. She enjoys volleyball and, there was another sport that we were talking about over there. Swimming, yeah, I shouldn't forget that. That's my niece's sport. And I asked her if she had career goals, and she said, I'm not sure yet. And at 12 years old, that is just fine. So please welcome her to the House and enjoy your time here today.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce a couple of honorary pages I'm very proud of today. If they stand, first, Kaylee Hector. Kaylee is 15. She's in the ninth grade at South Salem High School. She's interested in basketball. She's in honors classes. She does weights and yoga. Good for her. Her career goals are psychology and social work. And for those of you who spend as much time in IT as I do, Danny in IT is her grandmother. And we're real happy that she's here today. Thank you, Kaylee. And with her is another South Salem person, Hannah Frank. She, too, is 15 in the ninth grade. She's interested in soccer and weightlifting and honors classes. She'd like to be, this is an interesting combination, an airplane pilot or a dentist, or maybe she could be both. Welcome, Hannah, and we're glad you're both here.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank Thank you. Over on the side aisle here, I'd like to introduce some very special folks visiting from my district. Colleen, she's the mother of 7 daughters, 3 of whom are here today, Deborah, Lydia, and Trina. And they are people who are brave enough to actually educate all 7 of those daughters at home. Can you imagine? All have gone on to either have gone on to college or are graduating and moving up through the system, but all who have graduated from the homeschool have gone on to college. One is a program manager for Portland Opera to Go and is involved in theater arts in Tulsa. Another has received her massage therapy degree while her husband's pursuing a doctorate degree in history at Brown University. One is an entrepreneur and is opening a coffee shop with her husband in Portland. Deborah just finished her junior year at Oklahoma Christian in psychology, will be working in Alaska this year. And Trina is about to graduate from homeschooling this year and will be working as a cook's assistant at Camp Yamhill. One daughter who could not make it is graduating from 8th grade, and Lydia is graduating from 6th. They are very interested in the performing arts and drama, especially Shakespeare, and they are very involved. All of them volunteer for Oregon Right to Life, 4-H, church activities, and Kaiser Fire District activities, and they are here representing some of the home educators that we have in the state. So give them a big welcome.
Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, wanted you to extend courtesies. My intern, who's sitting next to me, Greg Alderson, has served both this session and last session. And Greg reminds me in some ways of one of my favorite basketball players, Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson, if you remember and you like basketball, had incredible vision. And he was great at seeing the floor and making an excellent pass. He made the pass and the assist cool again. And in the same way, Greg Alderson is always there to make the assist. He does great research. He's incredibly bright. He's a sophomore at Willamette University. He's on the speech and debate team, very successful. And future goals to... He told me to do something in politics. He's a political science major, and this is his last day this session, so please extend courtesies to Greg Alderson.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pardon me, Mr. Speaker. I'm choked up just seeing you up there. You look particularly satisfied and at home with all these bright students around you, as if you've done that before. Mr. Speaker, let's welcome Joan Erwart. Joan, please stand up. She's an honorary page from Winter Creek High. She's a junior there, interested in 4-H community service, leadership, horticulture, cooking. And she's, from a career goal standpoint, I think the representative from Southwest Clackamas County will be interested in this, she's interested in pharmacy. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and welcome, Joan.
Further courtesies, Representative Wingert.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, a couple of honorary pages here from my district. Kate Lucas, 16. She's from Sherwood and attends St. Mary's Academy, grade 10. Her interests include being on the ski team, the golf team, and an ambassador. And her career goals, college, then politics. So look out. Katie Vinson. Age 15, from Sherwood. She attends Valley Catholic and is in the 10th grade. Her interests include being on the dance team, drama, skiing, travel, and community service. She's undecided about her career goal, but leaning towards nursing. Colleagues, please welcome them both to the Capitol today. Welcome.
Further courtesies, Representative Kennemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have 2 homeschoolers as honorary pages today, enjoying Apple Pie Day, by the way. That's their way of telling us about homeschooling. Sage Kakla is in 6th grader. Her activities and interests are history, reading, and volunteering. And then career goals, writer, or interior designer, or architect. And my other page is Elaine Ingram. Elaine is a seventh grader, homeschooled, and her activities include Irish, dancer. Didn't do that too well, did I? But I have a bit of Irish. Youth group activities, piano and violin, and career goal is pediatric nurse. I want to welcome both of you to the Capitol, and thank you.
Further courtesies, Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe up here on this side aisle, I have some homeschoolers here visiting us as well, if they haven't hit their tour already. But we have Eliza Walzik, Kelly, Joshua, and Bethany Humley, Gabe Jansen, Suzanne, Luke, and Caitlin Blanchard, and many other kids that are here out of Yamhill County with the Homeschoolers Association, and very proud and want everybody to welcome them here today so they have a good day at the Capitol. Thank you.
And I would like to say welcome to all of the people in the galleries. And a reminder, we heard some clapping earlier. We don't allow expressions from the gallery, either pro or for anything that happens on the floor. So it's a welcome to all of you for being here. Further courtesies, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For the representative from Happy Valley, wherever he may be, I have two truly great Americans with us today. If you'll direct your attention to the side aisle, you're going to see my friends, and I hope they'll stand, Shirley and Bob Pierce. They're from Malala in my district. And these two wonderful people are dedicated supporters of our troops through a program called Patriotic Christmas for Our Troops. Tomorrow, on your desk, there'll be a flyer about this, but the whole idea is to volunteer and send supplies and gifts to our soldiers overseas so that they have just a little bit of Christmas each year. So I'm very pleased that they're here, and I think you'll enjoy reading about this tomorrow when you see it on your desk. And I might add, Mr. Speaker, you notice somebody else on the side aisle with Bob and Shirley. That's, of course, Sandy Sumner, the wife of our friend Max Sumner. Thank you all for being here, and welcome to the House.
Yes, thank you to your Capitol. Thanks for being here. And as Speaker, now I'm going to represent Representative Hunt, because we have one more page. Maddie Burnham, if you'll stand up, Maddie. Thank you. Age 13, from Gladstone. And Walter L., I think it's Krauberger, Middle School. She's an eighth grader. She is involved in choir and volleyball, and her career goals are to be a geologist or a science teacher. Thank you very much. And I want to thank all of, if you'll all stand up again, all of the pages, I want to thank all of you for your service to the House today, and I know that you'll get to see all these people as you wander around and help us all. So thank you for your service to the House. Thank you. You can sit back down. And now, for our history moment, we will recognize Representative Beyer for a moment in history.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's History Minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Robert Hadlow, who works for the Oregon Department of Transportation. Condi Balcom McCullough. For 18 years, Condi McCullough headed the Bridge Design and Construction Program of the Oregon State Highway Department. During his years with the Highway Department, McCullough became one of the leading bridge engineers in the United States. Several of McCullough's striking bridges span rivers, bays, and inlets along the Oregon Coast Highway, U.S. Highway 101. McCullough's work in Oregon, hundreds of structures, included over 30 arched spans, was one of the state's nationally recognized highway programs. The pinnacle of McCullough's career in Oregon was the completion of five major bridges on the Oregon Coast Highway in 1936, the Yaquina Bay Bridge at Newport, the Alsea Bridge, Bay Bridge at Walport, the Siuslaw River Bridge at Florence, the Umpqua River Bridge at Reedsport, and the Coos Bay Bridge at North Bend. McCullough passed away in 1946. In 2005, 12 of McCullough's bridges were listed in the National Register of Historic Places.
Thank you. And For those of us who live on the coast, the bridge in Coos Bay is actually called the McCullough Bridge. And it is that point when you come around the corner and you see the bridge for the first time coming home, you know you've arrived back at home. So these are very symbolic bridges in our place, and I appreciate the moment today. Verification of quorum. The clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Representative Chris Edwards. Representative Chris Edwards. Off the floor, Representative Nolan. Representative Nolan. Off the floor. Excused for business. Representative Buckley, Representative David Edwards, Representative Matthews, and Representative Hunt. Quorum is present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bill 2334-208-381 and adopted SCR 12, 13, 14, and SGR 16.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
SCR 12, a memoriam of Thomas Paul Tennant, 1957 to 2008. SCR 13, offering support and encouragement to Woodburn Chief of Police Scott Douglas Russell. SCR 14, a memoriam of William Robert Hankum, 1957 to 2008. SJR 16, expressing legislative support for efforts to promote peaceful coexistence of Christians and Muslims in Republic of Turkey.
Messages read the first time are passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3491 related to use of land zoned for forced use.
First reading of bills read first time are passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 5030 relating to financial administration of the Oregon Medical Board and declaring an emergency. House Bill 5031 relating to financial administration of the Oregon State Board of Nursing and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2056 relating to health regulatory board membership and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2229 relating to recommendation of Oregon Task Force on Land Use Planning and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2430 relating to application of prevailing rate of wage and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2707 relating to supplemental temporary disability benefits and workers' compensation claims. House Bill 3089 related to wildlife. House Bill 3177 related to motor vehicle fuel.
Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that House Bills 2105, 2285, 2335, 2457, 2629, 2910, 3099, and 3345 be read second time immediately. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the bills.
House Bill 2105 relating to purchase of bonds and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2285 relating to crime. House Bill 2335 relating to crime. House Bill 2457 relating to designated residential fire sprinkler systems. House Bill 2629 relating to crimes involving animals. House Bill 2910 relating to professional real estate activity conducted by a real estate licensee. House Bill 3099 relating to use of land zoned for exclusive farm use. House Bill 3345 relating to workers' compensation claims.
Consent calendar. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills on today's consent calendar be carried over to their proper place on Monday, May 11, 2009, third reading calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Third reading, House bills. Oh, sorry about that. Third reading, House bills. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 3082, relating to tax compliance and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3082A. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3082 is a pilot project aimed at making sure that people follow the law and allowing state government to operate more efficiently. It allows up to three licensing agencies to work with the Department of Revenue to require tax compliance as a condition of licensing. So a person who's seeking an occupational license or the renewal of an existing license would have to be in tax compliance. It's worth clarifying a couple of things about that. One is that no tax information would be disclosed. The department would be allowed to work with the licensing agency reviewing their own information in order to answer a yes-no question about whether a particular person is in tax compliance. We heard lots of testimony about the safeguards associated with that information, with tax information, and the penalties associated with disclosing it, so people can be very confident that that information is well protected. The other piece that's worth clarifying and explaining is that no one, what constitutes tax compliance? No one would be giving up any rights to appeal. No one would lose the right to continue their business as a result of this program. We heard lots of testimony about how frequently and how easily the department arranges payment plans for people who are unable to meet their obligations at one time, and that would constitute compliance as well. It's an appropriate and important step for the department to take. The plan requires the department to come back and report on its progress, and we'd have a chance to decide whether the plan should be amended, extended, ended. And it's an efficiency measure because the department would have to spend less resources pursuing the unmet obligations. I think it's an appropriate plan. It comes to you with the near unanimous support of the Revenue Committee, and I hope it earns your support as well. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I've been asked why I voted against this in committee, and I want to explain I have a great philosophical objection to this idea. This bill calls for a pilot project as described by the carrier. It seems innocent, and it has reasonable sideboards. But I think this is a direction, philosophically, we should not go. We are expanding the power of government in ways that are beyond my comfort level. The Department of Revenue is our tax agency, and it is in charge of tax compliance. It is their job to go after folks who do not pay their taxes. If we perceive that tax compliance is an issue, then funding positions for auditors within this division makes all the sense in the world. Licensing agencies, on the other hand, have a very different mission. They are government's attempt to protect the public by assuring minimum professional standards of the licensees. By combining these two functions, I see government overreach and an inherent unfairness in tax policy. There is no evidence, none was presented, and I don't know of anybody that has any, that says licensee taxpayers are less compliant than unlicensed taxpayers. But because we can, because we have their number on our books, we are treating them differently under this bill. Colleagues, lots of people have trouble with taxes. People make mistakes, and they find themselves under DOR audit and review. Under the philosophical underpinnings of this tax compliance scheme, folks could be denied their ability to make a living over tax disputes. Let me give you the example that I tried to put forth in committee. Every 3 weeks, I sit down across from a young mother who is licensed as a nail technician, and she does a very good job of taking care of my fingernails. Her husband works in the same shop. He's licensed to cut hair. These are not sophisticated or rich people. So they get their taxes done, and hypothetically, there would be problems or disputes. DOR says they didn't pay enough. They may disagree with DOR, but can they afford to fight this? Of course not. They're already on the edge, and their licenses, both of them, their ability to make a living is in jeopardy. Now, this particular bill has pretty high standards. It calls for their appeal rights to be already expired. And maybe these people wouldn't fall into this trap. But to me, philosophically, this underpinning, this idea that they could be at risk is odious. I understand other states have done this. We didn't have a big discussion about it, but it was mentioned. But just because other states do it doesn't make it right. And this idea of a pilot seems innocent until you consider where it's pointing it. This is too much power over in government power over the lives of a targeted group of citizens. They are targeted only for the convenience of the government, not for any other reason. Please join me. Vote no on this. This is someplace we should not be going. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I'm voting for this precisely because of my philosophy. If you want to do business in Oregon, you got to pay your taxes. I mean, if you're not willing to pay your taxes, then you shouldn't have a business license. The government, first of all, we should we establish policies, and then we put them out there, and we should help people comply with the law. Go out and educate them if necessary. If there's a problem arises and there's an inadvertent mistake happens, we go out and help them get in compliance. The vast, vast majority of legitimate businesses will all legitimate businesses will do this. This is not aimed at some little business person who isn't sophisticated. If you're rich or poor, sophisticated or unsophisticated, you have to and should pay your taxes if you want to have a license or renew your license. You know, there's a lot of talk about cheaters these days. The Madoffs of the world and the people that hire people without residency and take advantage of people, the workers, and non-compliance of wage and hour law, civil rights law, housing law, all kinds of law. You know, why would we have a licensure if we don't want folks that have those licenses complying with the law? I have a business license. My wife has a business license. We pay our taxes. It's really simple. We're sitting here scrounging around. We're searching through the couch cushions for money in this state. I've spoke to people in the Department of Revenue. There are millions of dollars of unpaid taxes out there, folks. And a lot of the folks that owe their taxes, and we're not talking about little tiny businesses. These are large, some of them high-profile tax businesses. They aren't compliant with tax law. Yet we continue to renew their business license. We say, go ahead. You don't have to pay your taxes. You don't have to adhere to the law. You can do whatever you want. Well, here's your license. Go ahead. I don't think people and legitimate business owners, I don't think the taxpayers, I don't think the citizens of this state want us to renew a business license to scoff laws, and that's what this is at. This is not at those good business people. We're going to get those people in compliance. We're going to help them do it. But this is aimed right at scoff laws, the cheaters, the people that don't care about this community. It's a good bill. Urge your vote.
Further discussion, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I just want to make one point. I sat through this bill in two different committees, and it's very clear to me that what compliance means in this bill to the department is someone who has stopped communicating, someone who has not paid their taxes, and has stopped communicating with the department. As long as anyone is attempting to set up a plan, who is in the appeal process, or is communicating in any way with the Department of Revenue, is not considered for the purposes of this bill to be out of compliance. If you believe that people who have stopped communicating with the Department of Revenue, who refuse to pay their taxes, should be licensed in this state, then you should vote no. I, on the other hand, believe that once you have said, I refuse to pay my taxes and I'm not going to talk about it anymore, should not be licensed in this state. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Reed, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the comments of the representative from Hillsborough and from Happy Valley. Also, glad to know that the representative from West Salem and I agree on the need for greater investments in the Department of Revenue. I did want to reiterate the fact that this bill is aimed at people who are refusing to communicate. I think the representative from Hillsborough made that very clear. The other point I would remind people of is a concept called the tax gap. That's the difference between what is owed in taxes and what is paid in taxes, and it's a significant number. Brookings Institution had a study a couple of years ago that suggested that nationally that gap is 20%. I'm certainly hopeful that Oregonians are more honest than Americans as a whole, but the April 2009 issue of Oregon Business Magazine reported that that's 18.5% in Oregon. So there's a lot of money that people owe as a result of our deliberations here and are not paying. And as we're about to confront budgets that will no doubt include significant cuts to programs and services that we all care about, that Oregonians need, I suspect these numbers will be important. So I appreciate the conversation, and I'm confident that this program will yield good results. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Representative Wingard votes no. Representative Hunt, how do you vote? No. Okay. Excuse for business. House Bill 3082A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3117, relating to post-secondary education programs.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3117A. Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise to urge your support for House Bill 3117, a bill designed to help community colleges deliver a new way of educating Oregonians through what are known as career pathways. The bill creates an expedited process for community colleges to offer career pathways certificates of completion. Community colleges have begun to create career pathways programs as a way of making it easier for low-income working Oregonians to enroll in affordable community college career degree programs and then move up the career ladder. As you know, colleagues, it's difficult for low-income students with family responsibilities to commit to a two-year program, let alone a four-year program. So the colleges are starting to divide their two-year programs into chunks of shorter duration. After completing each piece, students receive a certificate of completion for that piece and can begin working in the field while continuing their studies towards a degree that will further increase their household income. As an example, a computer science associate's degree may contain a series of network security courses. After consulting with its relevant industry advisory committee for that program, the college would if the advisory committee told them that there was an industry need for workers at this level. They would create a network security career pathway certificate of completion composed wholly from a group of courses within the existing computer sciences associate degree. One of the real advantages of this kind of program is the ability of students to transfer their courses up the educational continuum from certificate to degree. And then, because they're doing their studies at a community college, the students are able to transfer their credits to a university if they choose to continuing their studies to receive a bachelor's degree and beyond. Getting more Oregonians onto these career pathways is a key ingredient to creating a skilled workforce, providing economic opportunity and social mobility. But there's been an obstacle to meeting this goal. In Oregon, and this is extremely rare in the U.S., any for-profit career school has the ability to block career pathway certificates from being created at its local community college if it is offering similar programs. This is currently the case, even though the two-year career technical education degree programs, of which these certificates are a part, already went through a lengthy adverse impact process when the two-year degree was established. As part of this lengthy process, which can take up to a year or more, the college would have already received a sign-off from all the private career schools in its area that might be offering a program in this degree area. All new two-year degree programs are required to go through this process. Having already gone through this lengthy adverse impact process for each of their degree programs, community colleges are now being required to go through it again for each chunk of the degree when a career pathway is sought. House Bill 3117 is seeking to change that. It creates an expedited approval process in which for-profit colleges and a community college may meet to discuss possible collaboration, articulation, or partnership with the help of a mediator if need be. However, if no accommodation can be reached, under House Bill 3117, the community college may move forward with its career pathway certificate of completion. This bill in its final form was a compromise with representatives of the private career colleges, the Northwest Career College Federation, with the timeline that they proposed. Again, colleagues, this legislation does not affect any new standalone program or certificate at a college. A college would only be able to use this expedited process to offer a career pathway certificate of completion, which is already part of a program that's already been approved. Colleagues, I ask your support of this bill, not on behalf of the Oregon Community Colleges or their 17 presidents, and not on behalf of the faculty members or industry advisory committees who've worked many hours to put these together, but on behalf of the thousands of working Oregonians today and in the future who need access to this affordable pathway to success. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I want to applaud my colleague from Park Rose for carrying this bill. It was, in fact, a collaborative work between community colleges and the career schools, and I applaud that. But I will be voting no specifically for one purpose, and that is the process by which the community colleges will use to go through to basically get what they want. Right now, they are going through an adverse impact process, which is very lengthy, as was described, and this process is there for a purpose, because community colleges are taxpayer-supported programs. Therefore, by virtue of tax dollars, they can offer career programs ostensibly cheaper than a private institution can. And we've made that as a policy decision to allow that. We've also recognized the importance of allowing a private institution to exist. This process is lengthy, and expensive. And I'm not suggesting that for breaking up a career school that we allow or that they be required to go through the entire process, but the process is now going to be that they come together if they have a disagreement, they come together, have a conversation. At the end of the conversation, they don't agree. The community college can walk out of the room. All they have to do is wait 15 days. Then they get to do whatever they want. To me, that's not a process. That is a speed bump for the community college. That is the only reason I'm objecting to this. Community colleges are a valuable part of our community, but I think we need to give these private schools at least some better due process to try to maintain their scope of business. That's why I'll be voting no. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Dembro, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker, just briefly. I just want to say that just to remind you that most students at private career colleges do receive taxpayer help with their studies. Nearly all of them receive federal loans that they take out to go to career school. And I just wanted to make that point. I want to applaud the Federation of Career Colleges and the Community College Association for working together effectively on this compromise, and they pledge to continue to work together in the interim, and I look forward to that. And colleagues, I urge you to support this good bill.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Widener, for what purpose do you rise?
Courtesy.
Okay. We'll get that in a second. Thank you. Representative Clem, for what purpose do you rise?
Wrong button.
Okay. House Bill 3117A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Widener.
Request a unanimous decision to return to courtesies.
Representative Widener requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the side aisle over here, we have from the wonderful county of Yamhill in Oregon's wine country, the mayor of the great city of McMinnville here with us today, and one of our wonderful county commissioners, Leslie Lewis, who is a former legislator, and I would request permission for Ms. Lewis to join us on the floor today.
I would love to welcome both of you to your capital, and thanks for being here. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, if you'll please join me. You know, we rely heavily on the work of a lot of folks in this building and this institution. A lot of them are here on their own time, and today at my desk on his last day is somebody that I've relied heavily upon throughout the session. This is Paul McKean. Paul is a student at Willamette studying rhetoric, media study, and politics. He's a sophomore. This spring, he'll be going to the American University political internship in D.C. He's going to return to Beaverton, his hometown. He's also a graduate of Westview High. And I want to say thanks not only to Paul for your job well done and your dedication, but to all those folks that are interning for us this session. Thank you.
Further courtesies? Seeing none, we'll return to our order. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3121, relating to Keep Kids Safe registration plate.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3121A. Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Speaker, it's my honor to carry House Bill 3121A from our House Committee on Transportation with a unanimous vote and with 39 members of this body as sponsors of the bill. Each and every County Commission on Children and Families has supported this bill and a license plate for child abuse prevention. The last 2 days, I've had a floor letter for you listing each of your county commissioners and their support for this bill. Colleagues, I've tried for 2 sessions to get this bill to the floor vote. Today, with the support, understanding, and patience of the committee chair and the committee members, I ask you to vote for this license plate bill, which will allow drivers to purchase a license plate with the profits going to child abuse prevention programs. Colleagues, 31 states currently offer specialty license plates that generate revenue which is invested in prevention programs targeting children. Child abuse and neglect is a problem in Oregon. In 2007, there were over 26,000 reports of child abuse or neglect and 7,227 founded cases, over 7,000 cases. That would be every day an average of 19 children are abused or neglected in Oregon. This week, on Tuesday, we all were invited, us and our staffs, to attend a conversation about child abuse intervention. I attended that meeting and learned about the problem that the states have with adequate funding for supporting Carly's Law and other programs like that that we passed last session. Also, last month, we all wore the blue ribbons honoring or recognize a problem of child abuse prevention. It was Child Abuse Prevention Month. Colleagues, with House Bill 3121A, ODOT will issue a Keep Kids Safe vehicle license plate and designate $16 per year surcharge to an account designated by the Children's Trust Fund of Oregon Foundation for child abuse prevention programs in your counties. ODOT will deposit quarterly the proceeds into an account which will then be distributed to county child abuse prevention programs based upon the county where the license plate purchaser lives. The counties will then decide in which child abuse prevention programs to invest the funds. The Children's Trust Fund of Oregon Foundation, in coordination with the State Commission on Children and Families, will design the plates. Colleagues, the Deschutes County Commission on Children and Families has identified a private donor to pay the $13,000 non-refundable fee to set up the license plate production. Colleagues, I kindly ask you to help prevent child abuse and vote for House Bill 3121A. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Colleagues, I have a reputation in this building as not supporting license plates, and I want to clear up this yes vote on House Bill 3121. This bill came out in the last committee of the working House bills, and things kind of got away from me, and afterwards I realized I voted for a license plate bill. I'm going to correct that on the floor today. I will be a no vote. In general, license plates are used for ID, and I'm not sure that it's very helpful in the state when we have so many license plates that it's a little difficult to identify what state the license plate belongs to. And given that and the fact that, in general, most of these license plates raise very little revenue. I kind of wonder if you're not better off investing that upfront money into programs as opposed to trying to recoup it on the other end. I hope I'm wrong in this case because I'm sure this bill is going to pass. But I just think that there are better ways to get your messages out, and I would prefer not to have billboards on our license plates. And with that, I would urge a no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I speak to the bill, and I recommend that you, my colleagues, vote yes on this bill. I sit on the Governor's Children's Trust Fund of Oregon, and they will be administering the monies that come from this to any one of our hundreds of great child abuse prevention programs. This is a great bill. It does a lot of good, and I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wisnett, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Buckley, how do you vote? Representative Buckley votes aye. Representative Nathanson, how do you vote? Representative Nathanson votes aye. Representative Greenleck, how do you vote? Greenleck votes aye. House Bill 3121A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3122, relating to malt beverages.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3122A. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it's just past 10:30 here, but it's 5 o'clock somewhere in America. And with that, I am proud to bring you House Bill 3122, the Honest Pint Act. Now, when it is finally 5 o'clock here in Oregon and around the nation, there will be many people who will choose to enjoy a fine brew from Oregon's craft brewing industry across the nation and across the world. But right here in the heart of Beervana, we have, as the good representative from Happy Valley, who is also a co-chief sponsor on the bill, would call them cheaters. What we have is a rash of cheater pints. Now, a business can choose to sell beer in any amount that they desire, but if they're going to call it a pint, shouldn't it be at least 16 ounces? Cheater pints are often very difficult to distinguish from the real thing. They have a slightly thicker bottom or a slightly narrower top. The consumer doesn't know that they're getting a smaller beer than is advertised. Now, what's the solution to this? We don't know how widespread the problem is, and we wanted to make sure that we weren't coming down unnecessarily on what is admittedly a relatively minor problem. So we decided to take lemons and make lemonade. We're turning this into a marketing opportunity. What we've created is a system that allows, during the course of a normal health and safety inspection, for an establishment that serves pints to have their pint glasses measured, certified that it does indeed hold at least 16 ounces, and yes, for those of you who are worried about it, through an amendment, we do account for the foam at the top of the beer. And after that certification, they can get a sticker that they can put in their window that says Certified Honest Pint Establishment. We're not requiring anybody to do anything. It's not an unfunded mandate. We're ensuring that the cost of the certification is paid through the fees for the certification and the sticker. What this is a voluntary program that is a marketing opportunity for businesses that choose to serve a full 16 ounces. Why now and why a bill? When the economy is down, we want to make sure that we have a chance to creatively market a great Oregon industry that provides a lot of jobs to Oregonians and is an export industry for this state. This is a way to call attention to the fine work that the pioneers of the craft brewing industry have done in Oregon. The reason that this is a bill is that we're trying to set up the agency structure to ensure that the coordination is possible for the agencies that both do the regulation and the inspection to coordinate with the agencies that would do the certification for the sticker. The sticker would go in the window for 2 years, and afterwards you could apply for a renewal of that certification. This is a voluntary bill. No one testified in opposition to it in committee. It's a good bill. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Call.
Colleagues, to the bill.
To the bill.
Our state faces serious problems. and we're dealing with this bill. Because right now, more than ever, Oregonians deserve a full 16 ounces. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
So last summer, I made the mistake of answering my telephone. Someone from the Wall Street Journal was calling me, asking me about this true pine issue, and I said, yeah, I'll look into it, and that was the end of it. I didn't know when I looked into it I was going to find a name changer from Southeast Portland who was going to make a bill and make it a reality, but I'm glad he did, because now my word was kept to some audience who reads the Wall Street Journal, not myself, and I'm pleased to support his bill today.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question for the carrier.
Question for the carrier. Will the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
He will.
Thank you, Representative. Is there a reason today that an establishment cannot, that serves an honest pint, cannot put a sticker in their window or a table tent on their table or an advertisement anywhere in their establishment that says, we serve an honest pint?
Mr. Speaker, Representative, an establishment today could put up any kind of signage that they want to that effect. And in fact, I would argue that in some sense, they do. When they say on their menu that they serve a pint, they are in essence saying that they are serving an honest pint. They don't say it's a pint of 14 ounces, or sometimes they might say it's an imperial pint, but in essence, they are advertising that they are serving an honest pint. The problem is that we have many establishments that aren't, in fact, serving full pints when they declare that they do, and this gives the public a chance to have an independent verification that, yep, they're serving an honest pint, and if this isn't something the public cares about, then there won't be a market reason to apply for the sticker, and nobody will choose to participate.
Clarification, Mr. Speaker.
Clarification to the, will the carrier yield?
I do.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I think, is there anything that prevents an establishment from using the words honest pint today?
Mr. Speaker, Representative, no. And the issue
Thank
here
you.
Is that there's no way to know how honest that pint really is.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
And I'm going to make this real brief, colleagues, because we've already wasted a little bit of the time I've taken and 4 or 5 minutes earlier about this issue. We say this is a marketing opportunity. What we have is health inspectors going into our restaurants. They're going to have to take their time, and we heard there's no fiscal because, yes, the establishment's going to be paying for it. But we have an outcry from our public health officials today for food safety. And every moment of their time that they take away from inspecting the critical things in our food service establishments to doing something that an establishment could do today, the industry could do today without us making this law, is time away from protecting the public of the state of Oregon. I urge your no vote on this bill.
We don't allow clapping and other things in the gallery, but thanks for your interest in being here today and being part of our deliberations. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bailey, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, on the fiscal impact statement that we have here, the county health, I'm reading from it now, the county health departments estimate the verification of the measurement would require between 10 and 15 minutes of a health inspector time. 10 minutes. And we are allowing them to recover the full cost of that extra certification. Colleagues, I would argue that in a time when we are looking for more revenue sources to fund the operations of these inspectors, that this is an appropriate way to have a market-based opportunity to fund those inspectors and ensure that we have funding for the staff that are going out to these establishments. Again, this is a voluntary system. The industry is neutral on the bill. It's a simple bill that allows for a marketing of a great Oregon industry during tough economic times. I urge your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Representative Beyer votes aye. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. Representative Barton votes aye. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Representative Chris Edwards votes no. House Bill 3122A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3201, relating to Oregon Liquor Control Commission licensees.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3201A. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3201A comes to you from the Business and Labor Committee after a very successful work group in response to the first public hearing on this bill. You will notice that the amended version is a complete replacement of the first bill. Let me tell you a little bit where this bill came from. I met with many of my constituents in the interim who were talking about the inability to deal with bars and taverns in my district that were creating a lot of problems. We sat down with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and other folks in the neighborhood to brainstorm ideas, and this is an attempt to give an extra tool to the OLCC to prevent problems earlier, to deal with livability issues earlier in the process. Currently, as you see in the bill, what we would be providing is a modest new tool for the OLCC to implement a dispensing restriction on establishments that are exhibiting serious or persistent problems on some very specific issues: fights, altercations, harassment, unlawful drug sales, public drunkenness, or obtrusive or excessive noises at nearby bars and liquor stores. So we're talking about on-premise liquor sales. We're talking about giving the OLCC additional tools to deal with problem behaviors earlier in the process. The original bill started off with actually dealing with the removal of licenses, and in a work group discussion, that seemed like a step too far to go first. And with the support of the chair of the committee, we sat down with all the stakeholders and came up with this bill, which says if there's a serious or persistent problem at an on-premise liquor establishment, the OLCC may, and I want to emphasize may, it's still up to their discretion, place a restriction on dispensing when considering the following behaviors to be serious or persistent. And those behaviors, the ones I just listed, are indicated in the bill. Those are existing items that we specifically call out. This bill does not deal with off-premise liquor establishments or off-premise sales, because that wasn't the original intent of the bill. The original intent of the bill. It could be an issue we need to come back and revisit, but this we really wanted to deal with the on-premise sales. We believe this is a great next step because it gives the OLCC the ability to place a restriction on a licensee without going to the next full step of pulling away their actual ability to be a licensee. We believe a restriction versus a cancellation allows an opportunity for a licensed establishment to make the necessary changes to restore their full license as quickly as possible. So House Bill 3201A prevents serious problems from becoming persistent problems by enforcing reasonable safety and livability standards. This is a good vote, colleagues. I hope you can support this bill and be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
I'd just like to stand up in support of this bill. This is very important to neighborhoods, and particularly in neighborhood small businesses. There's been a significant revival of small business neighborhood kind of activities that keep a lot of lively neighborhoods in Portland and in Salem and in Eugene and in other places throughout the state. But what happens is one bad business can really spoil the the neighborhood for other businesses and for the residents that live there. This has been a persistent problem in my district. My constituents are very anxious that we pass this very reasonable, very modest approach to begin to get the problem under control and to keep our streets and our neighborhoods more more open and more vibrant and more livable. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bill.
To the bill.
Yeah, as Chair of Business and Labor Committee, we heard this, and it was made very clear, as a matter of fact, the question was asked of the lobbyists for the Restaurant Association. It was this specific business that we used as an example for this. Are they a member of that association? And the answer was no. Just like the bill relating to compliance with revenue, we're not talking about the legitimate, many of them family-owned businesses here. We're talking about a small number of scofflaws that just don't care about this community. They don't want to police their business, and they don't care what goes on after the people they're not policing walk and rampage through our neighborhoods. This is an attempt to get at those who don't care about our community, who don't care about our neighborhoods, and I think it will be effective. Good bill, should pass. Urge your vote.
Further discussion, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to the bill.
The bill.
Colleagues, this is a good bill. It's good for your community. It's good for your municipality. It was brought forth. You see, I'm a co-sponsor of this bill. It was brought forth by the City of Medford because they have a couple of problem children that they can't seem to get squared away. So this is a good way to entice them to toe the line. And I see after we brought up this issue, Oregon Liquor Control Commission did, in fact, put someone on probation down there. So this is a good bill.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kotek, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Wingert, how do you vote? Wingert votes no. House Bill 3201A, having received the constitutional majority, is passed. Representative Springer, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask for permission to return to the order of courtesies.
Representative Springer requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have some friends that are in the side aisle. I'd love for them to stand and introduce you to. I have Heather Lever and her daughter Madeline and her son Jonathan. And actually, Madeline and my son Austin were in preschool together when they were three. And so anyway, it's great to have them. We also have Kim Belgard and her kiddos, Leland, Addison, Sage, and Fisher, and oh, forgive me for forgetting which one is the neighbor. So please welcome all of them. They're here to celebrate homeschooling today. Thank you.
Welcome to your capital. Further courtesies. Seeing none, we will return to the order. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3271, relating to crime.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3271A. Representative Stiegler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. Colleagues, I rise today to urge your support for House Bill 3271A. This bill comes in an effort to try to modernize our harassment statutes, bring us into the electronic era, and it does effectively two things. First, it establishes and clarifies the definition of an electronic threat, and this definition, I endeavored to make sure that it was consistent with other definitions throughout the criminal code. and it considers other technologies that may come into effect that we haven't even thought of. Secondly, it elevates the crime of harassment under certain circumstances, specifically when harassment somebody has previously been convicted of harassment by provisions where they threaten to inflict serious physical injury on a person or to commit a felony involving that person, the property of that person, or a member of that person's family. And further, the current offense is again against either the victim, the same victim, or a member of the victim's family, or at the time of the offense, the victim was under a protective order of some kind. That would be a stalking order or a restraining order. At the time of the offense, the victim was 18 years of age, or the perpetrator believed that the victim was under the age of 18 and more than 3 years younger than that person. And this is to get at a lot of those sort of, Facebook, I guess, or whatever they call those, the MySpace kind of situations that you've heard about, or situation where there is conveyed a threat to kill electronically to the person or any member of the family, and that threat to kill is reasonable, and the person receiving it believes there's a reasonable threat and it's likely to be acted upon. Again, this is merely an effort to catch up to the modern era, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Speaker, do you wish to close? She does not. Who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. House Bill 3271A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3417, relating to estray animals.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3417A. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3417A comes to you from your Committee on Agricultural Natural Resources and Rural Communities. The measure designed to help reduce the overall cost of the BRAN program in order to avoid an increase in inspection fees and continue the program. What the measure does is to modify the definition of a stray animal to mean cattle, estrain, that horrible word, that are unlawfully running at large and being permitted to do so. By the way, that it means horses and cows running at large and being permitted to do so, or that are found to be trespassing on land enclosed by an inadequate fence. This measure authorized the Department of Agriculture to adopt rules establishing a fee for the determination of adequacy of fencing and to compensate the department for reasonable costs of determination. House Bill 3470 changes the content of notice by the person taking up estray animals to limit statutory inconsistency. If cattle, and I'll say horses, break through a fence on an open range and determination of the adequacy of the fence is necessary in order to determine whether the cattle or horses are a stray animal, the State Department of Agriculture shall make a determination of the adequacy of the fence and shall consider, among other things, the customs, practices of good animal husbandry in the particular area with reference to fences. The department may adopt rules establishing fees for determining the adequacy of the fence, and fees must be reasonably calculated to compensate the department for the cost of the determination. There was no opposition to the bill, and it is supported by the Oregon Cattlemen's Association.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Krieger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Stigler, how do you vote? Stigler votes aye. House Bill 3417A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Jensen, to what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request that we return to courtesies.
Representative Jensen requests unanimous consent that we return to the order of courtesies. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I have the distinct privilege of introducing to you a group of Hermiston's finest and brightest middle school students in the audience. The total group is 100. They're coming from two middle schools, and I think they're probably about half of that group here, and we'll probably ask for courtesies again a little bit later. Thank you, and thank you, college, for recognizing them.
And here they come. Thank you all for coming to your capital and spending some time with us. Further courtesies? Seeing none, we'll return to the order of business of bills, and we'll have the clerk read the next bill.
House Bill 2108, relating to career schools.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2108A. Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2108 comes to us from the Education Committee. It passed out of there with a unanimous vote, and it deals with private career schools. These schools offer courses in a wide variety of careers, and some of them decide to seek and obtain approval to begin offering associate's or bachelor's degrees. Right now, it's not specified who's responsible for regulating the school programs that do not lead to one of these degrees during the period when the school is working toward that. This bill simply clarifies that the Oregon Student Assistance Commission will oversee the school during that phase. That is the bill's primary intent. It's a good bill. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Representative Harker, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Representative Barton votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Representative Huffman votes aye. Representative Dembro, how do you vote? Dembro votes aye. House Bill 2108A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2134, relating to lead-based paint activities and appropriating money.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2134A. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2134A will create complementary programs under the Department of Human Services and the Construction Contractors Board for licensing and certification of lead-based paint renovation and lead-based paint activities. Because lead can cause permanent damage, even at very low levels, protecting people, especially children, from exposure to lead is essential to public health. It's important that you understand that in April 2008, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announced new federal rules that regulate renovation, repair, and painting in pre-1978 housing and child-occupied facilities such as schools and child care facilities. Compliance with these rules is a federal requirement that will be fully implemented by April 2010. If individual states do not seek authorization to enforce these rules themselves, the EPA will enforce them. As a result, House Bill 2134A will make the statutory change needed to allow Oregon to seek authorization from the EPA to administer and enforce the new renovation, repair, and painting rules. In a somewhat unique partnership, the bill creates complementary programs under both the DHS and the CCB for licensing and certification of lead-based paint renovation and lead-based paint activities. The cooperative efforts that developed HB 2134A divide the administrative and enforcement responsibilities between DHS and the CCB, eliminating duplication. To cover the cost of implementation of this federally required program, a $50 fee will be allowed for either DHS or CCB training and certification programs. The Construction Contractors Board will have the authority over licensed contractors, while the Department of Human Services will have the same authority over firms that are not required to be licensed by the CCB, such as schools, nonprofit organizations, property management firms, etc. Both entities will be allowed to take inspection and enforcement action in their respective areas and levy fines up to $5,000. The bill requires both DHS and CCB to use the fine proceeds for both lead-based paint activities, including abatement, blood screening, and education based on their areas of regulation and expertise. I repeat, if HB 2134A is not passed, the EPA will have the authority to enforce the new federal rules. I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Will the carrier yield?
Certainly.
Yes, the carrier yields.
What effect will this bill have on individuals who have bought a home that is older than this period of time and they want to scrape their walls and do their own painting?
This bill is not aimed at individuals. That was not discussed in committee. It's specifically those licensed contractors and child-centered facilities that are under the jurisdiction of Department of Human Services.
Okay, to the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, as I read the bill, I'm just a little concerned because it says that it applies to a person, and I didn't see a restriction only to those that are licensed. And so it says a person may not perform lead-based paint activities or renovation unless the person is certified. And so by the reading, by the language, it appears to me that this bill could apply to individuals who are working in their own homes. And if that's the case, then this is an invasion of the privacy of families and personal rights to work on their own home. And we have lived without this bill up to this point. And because of that uncertainty, I'll be voting no. Thank you.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Will the carrier yield?
Of course.
She will.
Good representative from Central Coast. Was there any testimony from the paint manufacturers and any discussion about their volunteer program about lead-based paint and your committee?
There was not.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cowan, do you wish to close? She does.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to address a couple of the questions that were raised, it does include an educational component that my administrator has reminded me of to address some of the issues that have been raised as far as individual families. That certainly is within the purview of the Department of Human Services to help people understand. There's little booklets and that sort of thing out on how you should control the old paints if one is doing renovation. But what's important about this particular bill, the reason we haven't had it up till now, and as it was said, things were going along okay, is there are new federal regulations. Those will be implemented by April of 2010, and the federal government will regulate how construction contractors are allowed to do this kind of work unless the state has the authority to do it ourselves. That's why there was no opposition expressed in committee to this bill, because the Department of Human Resources and the Construction Contractors Board spent a great deal of time in conversation to develop a process where there wasn't duplication of effort, where each could stay in authority over their own bodies and the people that they regulate, and the reason that this compromise bill came out.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? He votes no. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. House Bill 2134A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2205, relating to civil penalties imposed by Child Care Division.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2205A. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, HB 2205 gives the Child Care Division of the Oregon Employment Department authority to impose civil penalties of up to $500 on facilities licensed as certified child care that violate statutes governing certified child care facilities, allocates the fines or monies to the Child Care Fund, which is used for provider education and training. ORS 657A distinguishes the difference between two types of child care licensees. There's registered and certified. Now, I may be off by one or two on this, but registered child care providers can hold from 1 to 15 children, and certified is between 16 and 100 children. Currently, the law provides for the division to be able to impose a penalty up to $100 on registered child care providers, but there is no provision for any penalties other than the taking of the license on certified providers. This will allow certified providers to impose a penalty of up to $500. Now, that bothered me initially, and so I asked the chair if I could organize a work group and kind of massage that a little bit to make me more comfortable with allowing the division to impose a penalty of up to $500, because during committee I said, okay, you can charge up to a $100 fine for registered child care providers. In 2008, how many fines were less than $100 on these providers? And the testimony was that out of the 17 fines imposed, all of them were $100. And I said, well, I've got some concern about just going directly to $500 on certified providers. So representative from the upper left coast and I met with, was that correct? We worked with them, and they actually came out with a matrix and some provisions, which I will read very quickly here. The division shall adopt by rule a schedule establishing the civil penalties that may be imposed under this section. The schedule must provide for categories for violations which a penalty may be imposed, including non-serious and serious, to be defined by the division under Rule 657A.260. Subsection 3 says the division must issue a written warning for non-serious or serious violations before assessing a penalty. So that was one of the points in there that I wanted to get through. They can't just jump right to a fine or a penalty, but they get a written notice first. The written warning must prescribe reasonable time in which the correction for the violation can be made. Subsection 4, the division may impose a civil penalty of not more than $100 for the first violation before it gets up to the $500, and then there is a quarterly cap of not more than $1,000 per certified child care provider. We turned it into a good bill. I encourage your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Huffman, do you wish to close?
No.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Representative Cannon votes aye. House Bill 2205A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2207, relating to a central background registry.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2207A. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, colleagues. House Bill 2207 is recommended by the Governor's Office on behalf of the Department of Human Services. The current law requires the Child Care Division of the Oregon Employment Department to establish a criminal history registry. The registry, which became operational October 1, 1998, requires individuals who live in or frequent visit. Let me back up here for a moment. The registry, which became operational October 1, 1998, requires individuals who live in or frequently visit child care homes or apply to work in child care centers to undergo and pass criminal history and child protective services record checks before being allowed to have unsupervised contact with children. Based on the comments and suggestions from individuals and agencies that use the criminal history registry, the Child Care Division proposed House Bill 2207 as a housekeeping measure to change the name of the registry to the Central Background Registry. This bill was unanimously supported by the members from the Human Services Committee, and there is no fiscal impact.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Cannon votes aye. Representative Reed, how do you vote? Reed votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Comp, how do you vote? Representative Comp, how do you vote? Comp votes aye. House Bill 2207A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2604, relating to individually identifiable health information.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2604A. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm delighted to bring you House Bill 2604A from the Health Care Committee. More and more of us have our critical personal medical information in databases. And we assume that those databases are safe and our information is protected. Well, in fact, the more data systems we get, the less likely it is that they're safe, even though technology is helping us. A few years ago, one of the major health systems in Oregon lost about 3 million patient records because their standard procedure for data security in that unit of a system was to put the records in a laptop and take them home in somebody's car. And of course somebody broke into the car looking for the laptop and made available to outsiders 3 million medical records. The CEO of that corporation quickly responded in a press conference and said they'd find out who was responsible for that and take care of them, and they did a great deal to mitigate the harm from that break-in. But the fact is, in my mind, the person that was responsible was the CEO. This was very similar to what happened in the financial crisis, where when WorldCom and other organizations went down, the CEO said, "Oh, boy, somebody was responsible for here. It obviously wasn't me. It was somebody else." And the federal response was to create the Sarbanes-Oxley bill, which makes CEOs of corporations personally sign that they've reviewed the financial statements of those corporations and that they stand behind them. This bill does essentially the same thing in the healthcare system. It's a very modest bill in that it doesn't require anybody to fill out to report that wasn't reporting before. It takes the covered healthcare organizations in the state of Oregon and requires the CEO annually of those organizations to sign to attest that they have reviewed the data security systems in their organization and take personal responsibility for them, and further that they have notified their auditors and their board of directors, not the public, but their auditors and their board of directors, of any shortcomings in that system and any breaches to that system in the past year. It's very straightforward. It's simply for those of us that have worked in organizations, know when the boss asks somebody to do something and to bring something to them, the work gets done and it gets done well. And what this will cause the chief information officer to review the systems him or herself and to bring them to the boss for review, because the boss's signature is going to be on the line. It's worth doing. It's simple. It has no fiscal, and I urge your support to this bill, which will add a little bit of sense of security to those of us that have our personal medical records in data systems that can easily be breached.
Further discussion? Representative Kenemer.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
You know, I appreciate the sentiment of which brings this bill to us, and I don't think you can read the newspaper or be a patient and not be sympathetic to the problem here, and we witnessed this just this last week in Virginia, and we know that these files are really susceptible to interceptions and malevolent uses. I voted no in the committee because I think a signature isn't a solution. It's just a bureaucratic step, and I think we need solutions, not another step. Any CEO worth their salt knows this is a priority and has to be working on it. Thank you.
Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Apologize for rising again today, but my colleague mentioned one of the issues that this is unnecessary. It's not going to help anything. If I were to sign a statement, I want to put it in my annual report so that the people in my area that are interested in the hospital could see that the CEO is interested. A statement filed with DCBS isn't going to do anything. But there is one big concern that I do have in this bill, and that is that hospitals are going to have to submit a statement to the Oregon Health Policy and Research, the administrator of the Office for Oregon Health Policy and Research, all significant deficiencies in the design or operation of record-keeping systems or controls that could adversely affect the facility's ability to protect the confidentiality of individually identifiable health information. The last thing I want to do is make a public document of ways to breach my system or my weaknesses of my system. You don't go out and tell your enemy where my weaknesses are. You talk about your strengths. This is a recipe for disaster, and I urge your no vote.
Seeing no, Representative Thompson.
C-
Colleagues, I voted no on this bill because it's a feel-good bill that doesn't get us where we want to be. Do you think in the case of an employee leaving a laptop in the back seat of a car that the CEO anticipated that when he signed off on the security system for that particular program? Of course not. It was a stupid blunder somebody did. The CEO signs off on the security of a computer system, and then next week someone from China hacks into that system. What do we accomplish with that? The CEO couldn't have anticipated that. So what we're saying is the CEO will sign off saying we have a secure system and we've done everything we can possibly do, and that's what everyone's done in the first place. No one in the healthcare or banking or any other industry sets out to have a sloppy computer system these days, because IS people are well trained to understand the seriousness of breaches, and they do what they can to prevent that. In the case of the Virginia breach last week, probably that was a combination of dumb luck and a system that wasn't built secure enough. But I'm relatively sure the people who operated that system thought it was secure, and I'm relatively sure the CEO would have signed off on it, because his IS people would have told him it was secure, or at least his IS people wouldn't have gone to him and said, oh, by the way, we have a really crummy system that we built that isn't secure, so don't sign off on this. That kind of thing doesn't happen. So I think this gives us a false sense of security that if the CEO signs off, there's some validity. And in fact, there's not. We're still at risk with these systems no matter what, and people are doing the best they can with the technology they have. And we have to accept that as a standard for now.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Greenlink, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. I'd like to make a couple of points. First of all, the problem with the computer in the car was not that it was a blunder. It was the security approach. It was the formal way that they saved that security in case of a fire in the institution. They saved the data. It was officially to put it in a car and take it home. Now, with 300,000 patient records, I cannot believe that a CEO would have signed that. But more importantly, I do want to comment that the representative from Josephine County has read the bill wrong. The statement that all significant deficiencies in the design or operation of record-keeping systems or controls that could adversely affect the facility's ability to protect the confidentiality of its individually identified records is not reported to the government. Not at all. Why would I have a bill that did something that stupid? What it does is to certify the government that the CEO has reported to his board and auditors. If I can read this, this is the... It's what the ascertainment is that contains assurances that the signing officer has declared to the board of directors of the facility. And then it goes on to A, B, C, and D, what has been disclosed to assure that the CEO tells his board and his auditors where there are problems in the system. Certainly not where the CEO would tell the government and make public those issues. So this is really a simple, rational thing. Will it change the world? It won't. Will it possibly make a difference because it makes CEOs pay more attention to what's going on in their organization relative to data security? It will. And I really do urge your support.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Bailey, how do you vote? Representative Bailey votes aye. Thank you. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. No, I'm sorry. Sorry, Representative Thatcher, I'm not trying to change your vote for you. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. House Bill 2604A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2619, relating to printing of the Oregon Revised Statutes.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2619A. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill comes to you from your Legislative Administration Committee. It was brought to us by a member in our chamber who believed that we shouldn't have very, very long contracts with out-of-state corporations when, in fact, it would be in our best interest to have it bid more often so that local printing companies could actually print our revised statutes, which are required by law to be reprinted every session. Currently, we were under the process of allowing it to be rolled over for four other sessions. That means that a period of 10 years before it's rebid. This process allows us, since we'd already committed to this year, to start the process the next session to have a bid, and that would allow Oregon printers to bid for the printing of our revised statutes. I urge your aye support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2619A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2739, relating to motor vehicle dealerships.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2739A. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, 2739 is brought to you from Business and Labor in a unanimous vote. What it does, it allows your car dealers to have just compensation for any inventory that they may have in case they lose a franchise, in case they go out of business, and this is from the OEM. What is happening in some cases where the inventory is given at, say, 60 or 70 cents on the dollar. This does protect your local business person. I think it's a very good bill, and I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Matthews, how do you vote? Matthews votes aye. Chris Edwards votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Buckley, how do you vote? Buckley votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. House Bill 2739A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2755, relating to reinsurance.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2755A. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2755, one of the top concerns of constituents is the cost of health care and the cost of health insurance. Just as important as it is to increase access to health care, it's also critical to address the cost in order to slow the skyrocketing increases in health care and health insurance. Health care costs too much, and the costs are escalating far beyond the rate of inflation generally and people's ability to pay. More and more Oregonians are uninsured or underinsured. As more people lose insurance, the public sector will invariably end up bearing more of the costs of health care. Of the 500,000 Oregonians who lack health insurance, most are either employed
or dependent on someone who is employed. A disproportionate number of those lacking insurance are employed by small businesses that are unable or unwilling to pay the high premiums for health plan coverage. In addition to the currently uninsured, another 299,000 insured Oregonians have experienced a health insurance coverage gap at some time during the past 12 months. The Department of Consumer and Business Services is the primary regulator for commercial health insurance market, where roughly 42% of Oregonians get their insurance. From information supplied by the department covering the first three quarters of 2008, rates for individual health care plans increased at an average of 17.7%, and rates for small group health plans increased an average of 11%. But compare that to the cost of increasing inflation, which has been averaging less than 3%, and medical cost inflation has been more like 9%. So while those costs of inflation have been increasing from 3 to 9%, it really makes you wonder why you see health insurance rate increases requesting up to 15, 20, and 25% on top of last year's rate hikes. This bill will help us understand what's driving the increase in the health insurance market and see what we can do to slow it down. Reinsurance is essentially insurance for insurers. It allows primary insurers to spread or share the risk with secondary insurers in order to protect against the risk that policyholders' expenses will unexpectedly exceed what they have planned in their estimates. Public reinsurance pooling has currently been adopted or is under review for use in the regulation of the private insurance in other states, including New York, Arizona, Iowa, Missouri, and Kansas. How to structure the risk spreading or reinsurance will require analysis, this type of analysis that's proposed in this bill. House Bill 2755 passed out of the Health Care Committee with a unanimous vote. I ask for your yes vote today. I hope you'll agree that we should put the wheels in motion to start this work now. We, Oregon citizens and Oregon's businesses, really can't afford to wait any longer. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nathanson, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. House Bill 2755A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2761, relating to soil information.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2761. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Another top constituent issue, independent soil capability assessments. The good bill should pass 8-0, AgNet unanimous. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Clem does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Chris Edwards votes aye. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2761, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2950, related to code compliance.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2950A. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2950A creates a Construction Industry Energy Board to help the state and industry
address the increasing changes in energy efficiency for buildings and equipment used in construction. This board streamlines the process to review and evaluate energy efficiency construction practices, specifically in the areas of solar, wind, and the emerging areas for electrical vehicle infrastructure. The board is a jobs board designed to fast track through a consensus-based process new technology so that we can put our workers to work when stimulus dollars are directed at energy efficiency projects. Our energy regulatory process will be fast, predictable, and consistent. Our workers will know what to do and will be better able to compete with other states for new technology and energy efficiency projects. Good bill should pass. I urge your aye vote on this regulatory streamlining bill.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I was a no in committee. I was a no in committee only because we have, I represent some constituents that actually do manufactured housing here in the area, and their concern was that they had representation on the board. Since then, it's been clarified, and I urge your support of this good bill.
Representative Kennemer? No discussion. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Schaffler, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kennemer, how do you vote? Kennemer votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes aye. House Bill 2958, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3033, related to election petitions.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3033A. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3033A comes to you from your Committee on Rules, where it passed unanimously. House Bill 3033A is an attempt to harmonize state and local petition guidelines. But it seems to do more than just harmonizing local guidelines, as it has indeed harmonized a few of the advocacy groups in this building. You'll notice yesterday there was a joint letter in support on your desk from the Oregon Home Builders Association and the ACLU in support of this bill. What this bill does, it limits a signature gathering period to 2 years for petition to initiate county or city measure. It requires that petition to initiate county or city measure be submitted not less than 90 days preceding election at which measure is to be voted on. Restricts applicability of 2-year time limit on petitions to those petitions for which no other time limit is provided by city or county ordinance. It only applies to petitions, and there is an exclusion for local control in instances in which the local limit applies. Good bill. I urge your support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close?
No.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Cameron votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. House Bill 3033A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3090, relating to renewable energy.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3090A. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In October 1979,
Oregon law went into effect that required that solar energy systems not be prohibited by deed or by contract to convey a fee title. This bill updates that restriction to include in the definition of solar energy systems what amounts to clotheslines. The kinds of things you think of as solar energy systems otherwise were already covered. It does one other thing. It expands the coverage not just to fee title of real property, but also to covenants and in bylaws for condominiums or bylaws of a planned community. For those latter things, it has sideboards which protect the common property of the planned community and the general common elements of a condominium, so that you do not put the structure of the condominium buildings at risk. Colleagues, this is an excellent update of the solar energy systems law, and I urge an aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barnhart, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Wingard votes no. House Bill 3090A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3162, relating to employment discrimination resulting from whistleblowing.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3162A. Representative Stigler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to the bill. And, colleagues, I thought about bringing my whistle in today, but I didn't. I decided I would shy away from visual aids or I guess, auditory aids. At any rate, this bill comes to you from the Committee on Business and Labor, and it was a bill that I sponsored. And it, quite surprisingly, has gotten, at least to my knowledge, very little opposition. What it does, quite simply, is to clarify, it puts a private sector employee in not parity with a public sector employee, but at least it gives them a couple steps up. Currently, our public sector employees are very well protected in the area of whistleblowing, i.e. when they reveal or divulge some, bad practice on the part of a public entity, whether it's a violation of federal, state law, or regulation. Our private sector employees don't have this protection, and what this does is make it very clear that a private sector employee cannot be discriminated against or retaliated against if they divulge or reveal a violation of federal or state law, regulation, or rule. And in other words, it's yours and my tax dollars that they're effectively protecting, and this gives them the right, if they are retaliated against, to bring a civil suit or to elect to bring a process through our current Bureau of Labor and Industries, a bully proceeding. This remedy is one which, again, our public sector employees have enjoyed for a long time, but our private sector employees have not. And I think that it only is a logical next step to give our private sector employees at least a modicum of the same protection that our private sector employees enjoy in these kind of situations. So I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, today, an employer has to take care of their employees to have a successful business. Today, an employee, if he finds or she finds something going wrong in a business, can call the state agencies today that are supported by this body and by the citizens, can call that state agency, and in confidence, that state agency will research out that complaint. If there is illegal activity in a business today, whether it's an OSHA violation or a wage and hour violation, there are agencies that will come in and take care of that. And keep that complaint in confidence today. As an employer, I would suggest that I want to have open communications with an employee because I'd rather have that brought to my attention today to avoid having a state agency come in and start doing a bunch of investigation. However, if the employee wants to go do that, they still can, and I will never know. Any employer will never know about that person. So there's no retaliation. Public versus private, different places. Colleagues, if we have an employee, good employer, employee who has been counseled once, twice, and has been given every fair chance to correct that performance issue in the business, and today maybe the final straw fell, but they have a good trial attorney that they've talked to, and the trial attorney says, look, just before you're terminated, find a violation in the business, find a problem, and bring it up in front of the employer. And guess what happens? Now we have litigation. Now we have problems. We have potential litigation that doesn't exist today in our state that helps employees. Today they have avenues to take care of this, and employers to do the right thing in our state. Colleagues, we continue to look at the unemployment rate in this state, and we continue to do things that make it more and more difficult for business to come here that want to do the right thing. Stare at the people that need jobs today. Put them across the table from the employers that want to do the right thing. Ask the employee that doesn't have a job today, how does this help you? Ask the employer that wants to do the right thing, how does this help you employ these people?
Further discussion, Representative Shoffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
If I had a bum working for me, I'd just fire him. And I think every other employer would, too. I don't think that's what this is about. One of the things we learned over the years here, especially 9/11, showed us that the people that live here are the eyes and ears of the government because they are the government. One of the things we've done in this state for the last, 15 years is cut in half our ability to monitor what's going on in the workplace by radically reducing what the Bureau of Labor Industries and other policing agencies have in this state to watch over violations in the workplace, whether it be wage and hour, civil rights, unlawful doing of any kind by anyone. This bill is to catch those scofflaws that we referred to in the revenue compliance bill was heard earlier. Legitimate businesses need not fear this bill. On the contrary, it's going to help them, and they make them shine even more. There was no opposing testimony to this bill. And, Mr. Speaker, if I may, if everything we do is judged on the unemployment rate, we're not going to do anything. And maybe that's what folks want us to do. I'm not sure. We have to dig ourselves out of this hole, and that's by working our way out of this hole. This is just going to add help workers who feel compelled to come forth with information that someone is in violation of the law. I fail to see what's wrong with that. Good bill should pass or a dry vote.
Further discussion, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As a former employer, I too worry about what happens at the work site and how the employees feel about things. And I've had a number of things that happened that were determined not to be my fault, but it still is aggravation and it still makes it difficult to do your job. But the reality is, in this particular instance, I would like to reemphasize what from Happy Valley, our representative from Happy Valley, what he just said is that if you're doing something that you ought not to be doing, then that's a risk you take as an employer. So I just think that this is another incident that this isn't going to hurt your business, and it's just something that you as an employer need to be aware of. So I support this bill, and I hope you do too.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Stigler, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a couple of points I'd like to make, colleagues. First of all, this doesn't change the at-will employment provisions that our current state of the law is here in Oregon. Secondly, there's a good faith requirement in this bill, which requires that an employee who has reported something does so in good faith. Thirdly, again, I want to emphasize this only applies to situations where a report is made regarding a violation of a state or federal law, rule, or regulation. And finally, I guess, colleagues, what I'd like to say that this is about employers who do the wrong thing and employees who want to do the right thing. This will encourage employees, hopefully, to deal with this in the workplace and not have to do the secretive kinds of things that have been described here, i.e. the only option they have now is to go to bully or to file a criminal report. What we'd like is to have things resolved in the workplace, if at all possible, but if that doesn't happen, then there is an option here. Thank you.
Those are the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes no. House Bill 3162A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3175, relating to health professional regulatory boards.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3175A. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Due to the generosity and courtesy of the chair of the Health Committee, I get to carry this bill today, and I appreciate it. This bill comes at the request of my constituent, Brenda Ross of Malala. Brenda lost sight in one eye due to the malpractice of a careless surgeon, and a successful private settlement didn't settle anything for Brenda, so she sought out a legislative solution with my predecessor, Max Sumner, and now here we are with House Bill 3175A. Brenda doesn't get everything that she sought in this bill today, but Mr. Speaker, when you think about it, who does get everything they want, except for the chair of the Business and Labor Committee and maybe the President of the Senate and Oprah and I guess Puffy Combs. Anyway, she didn't get everything that she wanted, but she is doing something about victims of unscrupulous and incompetent physicians. And with her bill, we'll get greater transparency. So 3175 eliminates the requirement by certain regulatory boards to remove claims of negligence filed against medical professionals from their websites if no other claims are filed within 4 years. This bill, Mr. Speaker, increases transparency and diminishes malpractice. My thanks to the representative of historic Tualatin County and the senator who helped us, Senator Bates, because to me they proved that, number one, a gavel doesn't have to be a club, and that, number two, a compromise is still possible in this building. So join me in supporting Brenda Ross and the folks that she's fighting for, by supporting House Bill 3175. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Representative Gilliam, do you wish to do a closing act? Do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Esquivel votes aye. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Tomei votes aye. House Bill 3175A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 3204, relating to dental hygienists and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3204A. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3204A comes today from the Health Care Committee, unanimous vote. It would help us provide increased access to dental care by reducing barriers for folks to become a limited access permit dental hygienist. This bill modifies qualifications for limited access permit dental hygienists, most known as LAPs. They would be authorized to practice dental hygiene without a license if we change the requirements to 2,500 hours of supervised training, 40 hours of coursework in formal post-secondary accredited educational programs, and 500 hours of dental hygiene practice on patients under direct supervision of a member of faculty of dental program or dental hygiene program with required accreditation. Colleagues, this essentially is an expansion, or it's not an expansion of the scope of practice. What it does is says that those folks who want to be limited access permit dental hygienists, that we're reducing some barriers so you can make it easier for you to get into this profession so we can provide more access for dental care. I want to send out kudos to the Oregon Dental Association, the Oregon Dental Hygienists Association, for coming together on this bill after it was originally introduced and having a good consensus bill. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kotek, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. House Bill 3204A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3236, relating to immunizations.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3236A. Representative Thompson.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, this is a very simple bill. It expands access to health care. And it lowers the age that pharmacists are allowed to give immunizations in Oregon. Probably a lot of you are aware of the fact that pharmacists give immunizations these days. 85% of flu shots in Oregon are now given by pharmacists. And this simply lowers the age down to age 11 so that adolescents are covered. And it addresses a problem nationally and in Oregon. We're one of the states identified by CDC with a very low or relatively low immunization rate. This increases the number of points of access for families to get their children immunized. Comes to you from the Health Committee with a unanimous vote. Good bill. Should pass.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Thompson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Witt, how do you vote? Representative Witt votes aye. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Kotek votes aye. Representative David Edwards votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. House Bill 3236A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3279, relating to adult foster homes.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3279A. Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3279A comes to you from the Human Services Committee, and it is a technical fix to the Public Employees Collective Bargaining Act to deal with the very special situation of workers dealing in with adult foster care. And what it does is it adds the following language: mandatory subjects of collective bargaining include but are not limited to provider base rates and add-on payments. And it allows that bargaining to be done on a base rate and then, depending on the level of care needed, for add-ons. The language of this bill was reviewed and signed off on by the Department of Human Services, Department of Administrative Services, and the Governor's Office. There was no opposing testimony in committee, and I urge you to pass it.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Dembro, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Buckley, how do you vote? Buckley votes aye. Representative Gilliam votes no. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Barker votes aye. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. Representative Maurer, how do you vote? Maurer votes aye. House Bill 3279A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3343, relating to persons providing alcoholic beverages.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3343A. Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bill changes penalties for trained employees who sell liquor to minors. Unanimous vote from Judiciary. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none. Representative Smith, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Greenlick votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Quick in opening, slow in voting. Representative Harker, how do you vote? Representative Harker? Representative Harker, are you on the floor? Off the floor. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. House Bill 3343A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3379, relating to transportation and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3379A. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Hillsborough, Bend, Madras, Medford, Springfield, Redmond, and elsewhere, a strict interpretation of the transportation planning rule has inadvertently prevented projects, job creation, and new tax revenues to to the state. The transportation planning rule means that any city which proposes an economic development project that impacts a state highway system, which in many rural and urban communities runs right through the middle of town, must demonstrate how it will fund all of the costs of the upgrades that will be needed to fully expand the highway system to accommodate the expected demands over the entire period of the planning process. Because it essentially requires a guarantee that all necessary funding for the entire 20-year planning horizon for a new area will be available, and because the state cannot guarantee any funding beyond the 4-year STIP process, the transportation planning rule has been a de facto moratorium on job creation, which has resulted in lower tax revenues for the state of Oregon and contributed to our 12.1% unemployment. House Bill 3379A will allow local communities unable to meet the funding requirements of the transportation planning rule to apply for extensions, submit alternative plans for funding, or apply to adjust various traffic performance measures. Basically, this bill will give these communities the ability to move ahead with critical economic development projects without undue restrictions associated with adhering to the transportation planning rule. Let me be clear, however, this bill does not alter the transportation planning rule itself. It merely gives localities much-needed options to meet its requirements. So basically, without 3379A, we are giving up job creation, economic growth, and state tax revenues. With 3379A, we're gaining job creation, more economic growth, and more state tax revenues. This bill provides a safety valve for communities to continue with vital economic development activities if the state is unable to identify and guarantee its fair share of funding for city projects. It's supported by a number of cities, including the City of Hillsborough, City of Medford, and a number of other local organizations, including the Central Oregon Cities Association, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The good Representative Hillsborough explained it very much. You have a floor letter from the good representative from Van. This is very important to Central Oregon, and we solicit your yes vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close?
No, I will decline citing any ancient Greeks today.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Cameron votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. House Bill 3379A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3384, relating to public assistance and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3384A. Representative Dembrough.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it's a real privilege for me to bring this bill before you. This is a bill and a program that is very dear to my heart. House Bill 3384 fixes a problem in Oregon's Parents as Scholars program, a very important program within TANF, that's the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. Since the welfare reform legislation of the 1990s, TANF recipients are generally prohibited from enrolling in degree programs while they're receiving TANF. They're expected to be working, looking for work, or preparing directly for work. But often that work turns out to be very low-paid and short-term employment. The Parents as Scholars program is geared towards people who are looking for long-term movement up the career ladder. Oregon has been allowed to exempt 1% of TANF households from the bar on going to school, and it has consequently created the Parents as Scholars program. Parents qualifying for the program may enroll in a college or university degree program and continue to receive TANF payments to help support their families. It's an effective component of the jobs program, allowing parents to complete their degrees so that they're better prepared to obtain family wage jobs and more effectively care for their families in the future. With unemployment topping 12%, it's more important than ever that our parents have a quality education that prepares them for real careers, not just short-term entry-level jobs. I have myself had a number of students over the years who have transformed their lives thanks to this program. There is, however, a flaw in the system. Currently, if the number of households receiving TANF goes down over the course of the year, presumably due to a reduction in funding, the number of parents eligible to be parents as scholars goes down. Parents who are currently in the program are then bounced out in the middle of their studies. They can only continue their career path if they give up their TANF, which means giving up their ability to pay their rent and put food on the table for themselves and their children. House Bill 3384 fixes this scenario. It allows the 1% threshold to be exceeded temporarily until those currently enrolled have completed their degree. Parents will thus be allowed to finish their degree regardless of declines in TANF caseholds. Colleagues, this is a very slight and somewhat technical change, but for those affected, its potential positive impact will be tremendous. These are individuals who are seeking to transform their lives and to give back to society. They have a great deal to offer us. The more we can encourage them to stay in school and build their skills, the greater return our investment will be. This bill received the unanimous approval of the Human Services Committee, and colleagues, I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
First off, I want to thank the good representative from Park Rose for carrying this bill. We heard compelling testimony in the Human Services Committee from parents who are on temporary assistance for needy families who are taking advantage of this option in our TANF program, and they talked about their goals, their aspirations. One of the former students of the good representative talked about where she is in her moving up her career ladder. It was very inspiring testimony. And back in 2007, we passed a major redesign of our Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program, our welfare program here in the state, trying to provide as many options to our parents, our single parents with children, very, very low-income families, who are trying to better their lives, move into self-sufficiency. And one of the things we did talk about at that time was how do we make sure that those parents who have the capacity and the interest to pursue post-secondary education in order to get that better job with benefits, modeling the behavior for their children about the importance of higher education, allowing a pathway for those parents to take full advantage of cash assistance, but also really move ahead to full self-sufficiency. And Parents as Scholars was an important part of that redesign in 2007. And so this is a very important technical fix to make sure, as our TANF caseload fluctuates because of the economy, to make sure that for those families who have taken advantage of this option, that they are not booted out of the program because the caseload has dropped. So this is a very important element. But I also am glad this bill is on the floor today, because many of you probably saw the article, I believe 2 days ago, front page of the Oregonian, about some of the reductions that are currently under consideration in our Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program. At a time when our most low-income families with children need help, we're considering on the 30% reduction list for the Department of Human Services a set of reductions in our TANF program that will, by default, again, rewrite our program in a very negative way. And I know all of us are concerned about a variety of cuts. That's one that I think tends not to get a lot of attention, because the very low-income families on that program are not exactly a high-profile constituency that we hear from every day. But I think this bill and those cuts remind us of how important the TANF program is for what it's truly meant to do, which is provide a pathway to self-sufficiency for some of our very low-income families. It is a children's program. It is support for families, and the Parents as Scholars option is an important part of that. Thank you for your time, and I urge your aye vote on this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, Deborah Forey, who was a state representative, and I think it was in 03 that we worked together on this bill. We had a meeting at the Oregon Food Bank where several women came who were on TANF. They were getting food also from the Oregon Food Bank. And they talked to us a lot about the issues that were important to them. These were young women who had young families, numerous children. They were working hard to support their children, very often in dead-end jobs that they were required to have. Some of them were very interested in going to college so they could make more than minimum wage, so that they could have a future, so that they could provide a future for their children. They were wanting to go to college so that they could have a career rather than just a job. They were asking us to provide legislation, to support legislation that promote legislation that would allow them to go to college instead of having jobs. Of course, these were jobs with women who, some of them did not have a high school education, much less a college education. All they could do was work at low-income jobs. So then Representative Deborah Cafori, who is now a Multnomah County Commissioner, she and I worked together to promote legislation that would allow young women, instead of going to work in order to get their TANF benefits, would be able to go to college, some of them a community college, some of them a four-year college. So we crafted legislation, and if you remember in 01 and 03, we were in a recession not as severe as the one that we're in now, but still a very compelling legislative session where we were looking for funds. So it was difficult to come up with funds that would allow these young women to go to college so that they could get a degree and have a profession instead of just a job. So I want to tell you, in the recent hearing that we had a couple of months ago, we had a lot of people coming to testify in support of this. We had Bob Jundeff, who is a Disability Rights Oregon representative. We had Mary Geer, who is administrator for SPD, the Seniors and People with Disabilities. We had Jeffrey Brandon from GCSS. We had Meredith Cote from Oregon State Ombudsman Office. We had Mark Williams, who is an elder law attorney. We had Margaret Carley, a retired legal counsel. We had Marcy Engelduck from ARC. We had Patty Little, the Lane County Council of Government. We had Travis Wall, a Vocational Rehabilitation Division. We had Rick Bennett from AARP and Bill Olson, the Advocacy Coalition of Oregon. All of these folks are in support of this bill that would support young, usually young mothers, but also it would cover the fathers also of children who want not just a job to support their families at a low-level degree, but also they want a profession so that they can support their families in a way that is a testament to their hard work and a testament to their interest in education, which would also encourage their own children to rise and hope for a better educational level for themselves. And it's been said before that this the current statute requires that TANF recipients allocate accrued support payments to the state, whether or not the recipients were receiving aid during the time that the support payments were accrued. This bill requires that aid recipients designate aid accrued for periods that the state aid was granted. This measure removes the requirement that applicants for public assistance assigned to the state support payments accrued during periods assistance is not received, and it prohibits the temporary assistance for needy families recipients enrolled in school as an allowable work activity from being disenrolled because the number of individuals receiving aid declines from the previous year. Colleagues, When we first passed this bill several years ago, I think we only allowed 1% of the parents who were on TANF to... Thank you, Representative.
Representative Barnhart Yields.
Thank you. We only allowed 1% of the parents who were on TANF to apply for this new ability to go to college. This bill, later bills then did allow more parents to enroll in this, and this bill would allow even more. We did have an amendment which deleted the removal of the requirement that applicants for public assistance assigned to the state support payments accrued during periods the assistance is not received. It also prohibits temporary assistance for needy families recipients enrolled in schools allowable work activity from being disenrolled because the numbers of individuals receiving aid declines from the previous year. So the TANF recipients can go to a 2 or 4 year educational institution if the recipient is accepted for full-time attendance or is enrolled full-time, demonstrates that the completion of the educational program is likely to result in employment that provides... I lost my place.
Pardon?
I
just want to make sure you have the last
one. Okay, thank you. Okay. Demonstrates the completion of the educational program is likely to result in employment that provides the wages and benefits necessary for the parent to support the parent's family without TANF benefits and make satisfactory academic progress as defined by the educational institution toward a degree or certificate. For each calendar year, the number of enrollees may not exceed 1% of the total number of TANF recipients. Under current statutes, if the number of TANF enrollees decreases from 1 January to the next, the number of educational enrollees must decrease as well. This bill prevents TANF recipients already enrolled in educational institutions from losing benefits because of a decline in the total number of TANF recipients. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Dembrough, do you wish to close?
Yes, I do, Mr. Speaker. Just very, very briefly, very quickly, and I really appreciate the attention that my colleagues have given to the lengthy discussion of this this subject. This is a very important bill, and it will do really good things for people, and I urge your support.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes aye. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Wingard votes aye. House Bill 3384A, that's 3384A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. We are going to roll. We've got great progress today, colleagues. We've got 13 bills. We're going to roll over till tomorrow. We have then a whole additional set of bills tomorrow. Our intent tomorrow is to go until we finish all the House bills. All the House bills. So let's keep that in mind. Plan accordingly tomorrow. And the chair would therefore request unanimous consent that the remaining bills on today's third reading of House bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on the Friday, May 8th, 2009, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Final reading memorials and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended, that the bills remaining on today's final reading of memorials and resolutions calendar be carried over to their proper place on Friday, May 8th, 2009's third reading calendar. Representative Nolan, is that to... Okay. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 23 relating to Oregon Patient Safety Commission. Senate Bill 34 relating to taxation. Senate Bill 208 relating to suspension of driving privilege. Senate Bill 381 relating to health benefit plans.
Bills read for the first time were referred to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 55 relating to ineligibility for public works contracts and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 92 relating to research conducted by the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. Senate Bill 100 relating to Department of Corrections. Senate Bill 197 relating to student law clerks for the Public Utility Commission and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 212 relating to administration of criminal fine and assessment account funding for victim assistance programs and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 217 relating to historic preservation revolving loan fund and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 233 relating to crime victims' rights and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 243 relating to criminal procedure. Senate Bill 248 relating to juvenile proceedings. Senate Bill 367 relating to Thomas Paine. Senate Bill 562 relating to Oregon Law Commission and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the second time are passed to the third reading calendar. Third reading of Senate bills. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over their proper place on Monday, May 11th, 2009's third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate, orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request a rule suspension for the purpose of Representative Barton to change his vote on House Bill 3175.
Representative Hanna requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and allow Representative Barton to change his vote on House Bill 3175. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Barton, how do you vote?
Aye.
Barton votes aye. The peer pressure was too great. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I once again request rule suspension to allow Representative Nolan to change her vote on House Bill 2619.
Representative Hanna.
It will not change the It will not change the outcome.
Representative Hanna requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and allow Representative Nolan to change her vote on House Bill 2619, correct?
That is correct.
2619 will not affect the outcome. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Nolan, how do you vote?
No.
Nolan votes no. Representative Hanna, further announcements? Representative Jensen, further announcements?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources will meet at 1:15 sharp. Thank you.
Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Human Services Subcommittee of Joint Ways and Means will convene at 1:15.
Representative Nolan.
Mr. Speaker, in honor of the good work and productive efforts this morning and as an inducement to perform as well in the future, I am canceling the Democratic caucus.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Services will meet at 1:15 also.
Any final announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday there was a lot of talk about what the job our federal government is or is not doing. I don't know if you read the opinion section yesterday in the Statesman Journal, but there is an opinion about credit card legislation that's going to help consumers, being sponsored and driven by none other than our brand new junior United States Senator, Democrat Jeff Merkley, former Speaker of this House. It's going to ban universal default, ban so-called double cycling billing, prohibit companies from charging a fee when payments are made by phone or internet, require that monthly payments first be applied to the balances with the highest interest rates, thereby enabling consumers to pay off balances sooner, and restrict marketing of credit cards to young adults. The very same people that it was claimed yesterday are not having their feet held to the fire by the federal government will probably have some concerns about this legislation if I was going to make a bet. And here we are. Now, this is change I can believe in. And the beautiful thing about this is, the good senator was on the radio this morning. There aren't just Democrats behind this legislation. He has Republican co-sponsors as well. It's a great example of how democracy should work. And just by the way, on I believe it's page 145 of the TARP report that was held up by my friend here from Southern Oregon yesterday, there is a page that points out and directs the recipients of this money to go to the Congress and report where this money's gone. I wish I'd had that yesterday. I may have been able to persuade some of you good people. Either way, I just thought I'd share some of the good things that are happening with our federal government, and I wish them luck, and I hope they keep up the good work.
Further remonstrances. Representative Gelster.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today with a concern and also some optimism that this concern will be addressed. Recently, the PEB board voted to become self-insured for the state of Oregon, which is a great thing. We're going to save some money. This is fantastic. However, in choosing their provider, they chose Providence and recognized that there are some gaps in coverage around the state, the largest of those gaps being the entirety of Benton County, which I represent, and the employees at Oregon State University. Doing a quick check, the closest covered providers from Corvallis are in McMinnville or Newburgh, and there are only a handful there. Colleagues, it is a really big state. And it is very important that as PEB moves forward and looks to negotiate these contracts, that we ensure that people in communities like Corvallis, Philomath, Klamath Falls have access to medical care, that they do not have undue burden placed upon them to drive an hour to take their children to the pediatrician, to drive 45 minutes to have a prenatal exam, to have hospitals that cover their needs. I talked with PEB while we were on the floor here. I was disappointed that they are not yet aware of any Providence contracts in that area. They stated that they hope to get there before January, but that they still have much work to do. I would have hoped that these types of questions would be answered before the decision was made. I also am very disappointed that PEB declined an invitation to visit with the Faculty Senate at Oregon State University to address the concerns and questions they have about the questions this raises about their coverage. Again, colleagues, we have a very big state with many communities in the state, and it's very important when we make decisions that we consider all of them. I'm very hopeful that PEB will work rapidly to address this issue. I'm hopeful that they will reconsider the invitation to meet with the individuals at OSU, and I am most hopeful that children, women, men, anyone that needs medical care can do that at the fine medical facilities that are available in Benton County and won't have to get in their car and drive for an hour just to have a primary care physician visit. Thank you, colleagues.
Further remonstrances, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As my good colleague just noted, PEB will become self-insured in 2010, which will, in fact, save the state money, but it also puts the state in a very awkward position on three accounts. Number one, PEB will no longer be required to abide by Oregon insurance regulations to include insurance health mandates. PEB will not pay the new premium tax, the purpose of which is ostensibly to provide coverage for low-income Oregonians, thus putting more burden on those people that, in fact, pay for health insurance out of their pocket. And PEB will no longer be charged an assessment on premiums paid to the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, or OMIP. And OMIP is Oregon's high-risk pool for individuals who have pre-existing medical conditions. So I wish PEB had come to the legislature to advise them, or advise us, this body, of that decision. It's good, and it's bad, and it's now too late.
Further remonstrances. Adjournment. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Friday, May 8, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Friday, May 8, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourns.